Chapter 2. I braced myself for the giant ball of black fur and orange eyes to pounce. But it merely paced back and forth in front of us, as though it was waiting for something. Backup? I needed to make the first move before the wolf's pack arrived. It seemed like a good idea to make sure we didn't get surrounded by a bunch of these huge creatures on their home turf. I didn't come to a fur to kill anyone or anything except Kosen and his men, but I would do what was necessary to protect my family. And this wolf looked ready to eat them.
My lord, please, be patient,
Mariah pleaded.
Something is not as it seems.
I don't like this, I muttered. Something feels off.
Perhaps because this is not your average wolf,
Lyca said in a soft voice.
I'm not sure what it is.
Well, what is it doing?
Aliona asked as she stood beside me with her violet eyes on the large canine. It's waiting for something, I said, and gripped the sword of Hatra in front of me. I just don't know what.
I've never known a wolf who doesn't travel in a pack,
Lyca murmured.
I agree,
Nokomis said with a frown.
Even the wolves in Odraine travel in packs. If that's what he's waiting for, we can't just sit here. They'd have us surrounded in seconds.
Before we could make any decisions, the wolf stopped pacing and took a few steps back. Then he rose onto his back legs, and I stepped out in front of my group with my sword ready. Instead of attacking, the wolf changed shape, and I recognized the ability to shapeshift as the jet black fur disappeared and dark olive skin took its place. Paws melted into hands, and a nose replaced the snout until a starkly naked man stood in front of us with his hands out in front of him, as if to show he carried no weapons. I didn't loosen my grip on my weapon as I eyed the man with suspicion.
By the gods, Nike whispered.
What? I asked under my breath, without taking my eyes off the man.
He must be a Tunglian, my fellow noble said. I've never seen one before.
Me either,
Lyca breathed, and her own wolf ears perked forward with interest.
This is incredible.
He looks like a werewolf, I muttered. Except I don't see the full moon.
A werewolf?
Aliona repeated.
What's that?
Well, they're men who can change into wolves, I explained with a shrug. But they only do it with a full moon. The Tunglian continued to stare at us as we discussed his existence, and his neon orange eyes had faded into a calm amber color in his human form. His black hair jutted out at wild angles, and his bare chest was marked only by a scar shaped like a star. I quickly realized it wasn't a scar from a wound, but instead it was a brand burned into his skin. The fuck?
I heard they draw their power to shapeshift from the moon,
Lyca said.
But it's hard to know much about them. They rarely speak to those outside their pack.
And I won't begin divulging any of our culture to you today.
The man finally spoke and lowered his hands to his sides.
You have trespassed in my forest. This land belongs to the Runsa pack. What business do you have here?
Sorry for intruding, I said, and lowered my sword to my side. We didn't know anyone else was here.
That didn't answer my question,
the man replied as he narrowed his eyes on me.
Why are you in our forest?
I considered what information to give the shape-shifting stranger. He stood with his hands down, and his breathing was calm and even. He didn't seem to have any desire to attack us, and I didn't want to give him one. But for all I knew, the wolf was guarding Kosen's group from outsiders. We're just passing through, I said after a moment. Like I said, we didn't know anyone was here. We didn't mean to bother you. We just want to get to the other side of the forest. We heard about some caves there.
What do you want with the caves? He asked.
His tone changed from angry to skeptical, and I noticed his gaze kept falling to the sword of Hatra in my hand. He didn't ask about it, but he couldn't stop looking at it every few seconds. Although the wolfman was strange, I didn't feel the need to either hide my blade from him or brandish it. I couldn't get a read on this guy at all. I wondered if Nokomis had picked up on anything with her empath ability, but she remained stone-faced as she watched the Tunglian with mild interest.
Just looking for someone, I said in a casual tone. Do you mind if we...
Looking for someone in the Yossel Stone Caves?
The Tunglian's eyes widened in surprise.
Who? I don't think that matters, I said as I steeled my grip on the sword. All that matters is we have no intention of staying in your forest.
And we greatly apologize to the Runsipak for using your forest in our travels.
Laika added with a sideways glance at me.
We didn't mean to intrude on your territory.
And that, I agreed, and motioned past him. Now, I think we'll be on our way. You can't simply walk into the Yassel Stone Caves, the wolfman sighed. You must know this. It is the Kosin's territory, and our line ends with his. Wait, you know Kosin? I frowned as I sheathed my sword. And you aren't guarding the caves for him? Me? The Tunglian pointed at his chest and barked a laugh. No. My name is Mael, and I'm the alpha of the Runsipak. I have no alliance with the Kosin.
I told you.
Mariah breathed.
He's a friend.
That's a relief. I chuckled and stuck out my hand. My name is Lord Evan of Hatra. Sorry about all the tension. We've never met a Tunglian before. I couldn't honestly say I'd met many people who felt comfortable standing in front of a group of complete strangers buck naked. But it didn't seem to bother the wolfman at all. He stood in front of us in all his bare-assed glory, as though he didn't have a care in the world. Then he stepped toward me to return the greeting, and I made sure my eyes stayed above the equator as I focused on his face. It was slightly less awkward than I expected when he stood an arm's length away from me. Most haven't, Mael said as he gripped my forearm. We stay away from other civilizations. They don't always, agree with our way of life.
True wolves,
Laika murmured.
You live outdoors with just your pack?
Yes, he confirmed. We follow all the old traditions of our ancestors, and they tend to collide with the more contemporary beliefs of other races. I considered asking about these old traditions, but I decided it wasn't worth asking the questions right now. We had enough on our plate at the moment, so I skipped over that and focused on the fact their traditions kept them separated from others for some reason. So why did Kosin set up shop so close to you? I wondered. If you stay away from other people, you must not like him being your neighbor. No, we don't care for his proximity, Mael grunted. But he has respected the boundary so far, and we've done the same.
You called him the Kosin,
Polina said as she tapped her finger against her lip.
Why is that?
It is what he calls himself, Mael shrugged. Like you call yourself a lord, he calls himself the Kosin. I don't know his real name. How long has he been staying in the caves? I asked. Quite a few years now, he said. When I took over as Alpha, the agreement was already in place. I wouldn't have agreed to it myself, but the previous Alpha's word can't be broken without reason. Afur used to be all our territory until he arrived and took over the caves. Why did he come? I felt like I was grilling the Tunglian, but I had to know everything I could about the Kosin before we went after him. I'm not sure why he chose Afur, Mael admitted. A few of my pack members have seen his men stow away treasures, and we've heard rumors they go destroy other cities and villages to get him. But we've never seen it for ourselves. As I said, he's respected the boundary between the caves and the forest so far. So this douchebag is sitting up there in his cave, sending his guys to conquer other people and steal their stuff, but that isn't enough for the pack to break the agreement? I met his stare with gritted teeth. The Kosin and his men were out there hurting people, and the Runsipak had no plans to stop him. I didn't care if they liked to avoid people. Refusing to stop someone like that was a disgrace, especially when they knew who was doing it. They haven't hurt my people, Mael started. Yet, I cut him off with an icy stare. How long until they decide it's your treasure they want, huh? You know he has captives too, right? What? The wolfman's mouth dropped open as he squinted at me with confusion. What are you talking about? He's holding people hostage, I thundered, and took a step closer. Two of them escaped and came to me for help. And you and your pack just hung out here in the forest while that bastard tortured them.
My lord,
Aliona murmured as she took my arm.
Let's take a moment.
My chest heaved up and down while I stepped backward and tried to catch my breath. I was already furious with the Kosan for forcing the dragons to do his bidding. But now, this so-called Alpha was only minutes away from the thieves and hadn't done anything to help? I was disgusted, and I knew the feeling was written all over my face. Mael began to pace back and forth again as I cooled off, and I took a deep breath before I turned to face him. "I'm going to rescue the captives," I said in a firm voice. "Are you going to stop us from continuing through your territory?" "No," Mael shook his head. "My pack will give you safe passage, but we will not cross the boundary as of now. I want to speak with my people about the information you've given me." "Go ahead," I muttered. "You let them be thieves. Why not let them be kidnappers, too?" "The Kosan is not someone to trifle with, my lord," he warned, and stopped pacing to square up to me. "I can sense you have great strength and power, but the Kosan is no fool. I've seen the bodies of his men who dared to question him. He has no regard for people's lives." "Then he'll be treated the same way," I said. I didn't risk looking at Nokomis when I uttered my decision, but I wasn't sure how much mercy she would want to give to someone like the Kosan. She was known for her ability to see the good side of letting people live. But if the Kosan had already built up a reputation for killing anyone who asked a question about his decisions, he didn't deserve our mercy. He deserved to receive the punishment he'd been doling out, especially to the dragons. Mael motioned for us to follow him deeper into the forest, and after a few minutes, he stopped to kneel down behind a tree. He picked up a pile of clothes and began to dress, but it wasn't his pants or shirt that interested me. It was the noble sword he slung onto his belt.
"There she is!"
Mariah cried out.
"I knew she was here somewhere! It's Neve!"
"You're a noble of the sword?" I asked in disbelief. "Yes," Mael confirmed, as he fastened his belt and turned to face me. "I noticed you are as well, which is why I didn't attack when you first appeared in our territory. I have great respect for the Brotherhood of the Noble Sword."
"And Sisterhood?"
Nokomis smirked as she tapped the Sword of Mercy in her scabbard. "Indeed," the wolfman chuckled. "It isn't often we see a woman who is willing to be such a warrior." "Well, there are three female nobles of the sword that I know of," I said with a grin. "I wouldn't be surprised if there are more." "There wouldn't be for this one," Mael replied as he resumed his walk through the forest. "Only the Alpha of the Runsa Pack becomes a noble of the Sword of Abundance." I was familiar with the Alpha Werewolf concept, but that was certainly a new way to make sure only a strong Tunglian held onto the blade. It also meant the Alpha had to always be in the same bloodline, which made me wonder how they chose the next Alpha in the case of brothers, but it also led me to another conclusion. "Interesting," I murmured. "So the Alpha who made the deal with the Kosan was your dad?"
"Yeah." He scrunched up his nose in annoyance. "We didn't feel the same way about a lot of things, including that pact. But I don't disrespect him or his time as Alpha."
"I can understand that," I said with a shrug. "It's just hard for me to wrap my head around knowing people are getting hurt and not doing anything about it."
"I didn't know about the captives," Mael insisted. "And as for the treasure hunting, we haven't seen the destruction for ourselves. It's not smart to start a war based on rumors."
I frowned, but didn't argue with the Tunglian. He'd avoided the Kosan and his men so far, but he also hadn't done anything to help them, so at least he wasn't a friend to their criminal cause. Not to mention, he was also a noble of the sword, and I felt a similar kinship with him as I shared with Nike. He was a warrior, and I had a feeling he wouldn't stay away from the Kosan for much longer now that he knew about the kidnappings. But knowing he was a noble of the sword also brought in a new set of questions. I couldn't bond with him because the Redeemi Vincio ceremony required a female. But I'd have to find out more about Mael and his bloodline to get the next step in the ritual done. Yet I couldn't bring myself to start talking about the ceremony when I knew my fellow dragons were a short distance away, being held captive and possibly tortured.
I wanted to close the breach more than anything. But I couldn't leave my brothers to deal with one more day of the horrors the Kosin and his men inflicted upon them. The mental battle between my big mission and our dragon rescue mission continued, and I tried to decide how to bring up the Redeemi Vincio bond with Mael as we continued through the forest. I hated this part of the mission anyway, but knowing we had another problem to solve made it even more difficult. Did I ask a stranger who I could form a blood bond with? Or did I ignore the biggest problem on Anadi so I could save some of my fellow dragons? Decisions, decisions.
My love, are you all right?
Aliona asked in a quiet voice. My wife had a way of noticing my internal struggles, and I felt the whirlwind of thoughts and emotions slow down as she laced her fingers through mine. I want to find out who to bond with, I whispered. But I don't know how long we'll have to save the dragons. For all we know, the Kosin is pissed about Mikhail and Angelos getting away and is taking it out on the ones who haven't escaped.
You already know what you must do,
she assured me.
Your heart is always in the right place.
But the breach, I groaned.
Will still be needing us to close it,
she said.
And these dragons' lives are at stake now. We can come back to speak to Mael once we've sent the dragons back to Hatra.
What if, I started. But Aliona pressed her finger to my lips.
There are a million things that can happen at any time,
she said.
You do what's right, and that's what matters.
My wife had an uncanny ability to put things into perspective for me. She was right about the dragons' lives being at risk, especially if I was right about the Kosin's response to the escape. Even though the breach put millions of lives at risk, King Rodion had the seal over it. The dragons had nothing to stop the Kosin from torturing or killing them to make up for Angelos and Mikhail's escaping from the caves. Aliona knew I'd already decided what needed to be done, but she was good at reminding me. I try, I sighed. I hope this is right.
It feels like it,
she confirmed.
You need to save them. They deserve to live free. What good is closing the breach if our people continue to live in pain and suffering?
Okay, I agreed. Maybe when we come back, the Tunglians will decide to take back the caves. Mael seems pretty pissed about the Kosin having prisoners.
Perhaps,
Aliona said with a smile.
You may have created a new alliance.
Before I could respond, the wolfman suddenly came to a halt and turned to face us. We've arrived at the border, Mael announced. We were stopped about 10 feet from the edge of the trees, and I could see more of the strangely tall rock formations just past the tree line. I couldn't hear anything beyond the boundary, and the trees blocked my view of the caves. I had no idea what we'd find past the forest, but Aliona was right. I knew this was what we had to do. Thank you for giving us free passage, I said to Mael. If it's all right with you, I'd like to come back and talk to you more about the noble swords later. You're always welcome to the Runsa Pack, he replied with a nod. Just show them your blade, and you'll be granted entry into our territory. Thank you. I gripped Mael's forearm before he turned and headed back into the forest. All right, let's do this. I led our smaller group toward the tree line, and we stopped at the edge of the shade and stared out onto the strange landscape. The rock formations looked like skyscrapers, but past the forest, they were greater in number. At least 36 of the tall stones were spread out in front of us, and each of them was surrounded by smaller stones. The ground was more of the flat stone, and it spread out like a never-ending expanse of pale yellow.
It's quite unique,
Trina observed.
I've never seen such stone before. Look up there,
Marina said as she pointed to the nearest cave. Though we couldn't see inside the cave, the sun glinted off bright green rocks that jutted out from the mouth of the cavern. They looked like emeralds as they shimmered in the sunlight, and I wondered if they filled each of the caves. We can't search all of these easily, I grunted.
Your inner dragon is quite certain of where to go,
Mariah said.
Let him guide you.
I felt a tug at my subconscious, almost like when I was near treasure, and I knew my inner dragon had a plan to lead the way. But there was one other problem with simply walking in that direction, and I wasn't the only one to notice. My lord,
There's no cover here, Nike pointed out with a frown. Once we're past these trees, anyone could look out of a cave and see us long before we see them.
And they would have the upper hand in both location and surprise,
Leica agreed.
We can't walk out into the open.
I can try to move the stones around to cover us, I suggested. I can feel their energy with my stone magic.
If the stones are moving with us, we'll stand out just as much, Nike said. We need to blend in with them.
Oh!
Aliona opened her spatial storage and pulled out something that looked like a wide brown blanket.
We can use this. I think it would still stand out, m'lady,
Nakoma said, as she cast a doubtful look at the blanket.
It's not even the same color as the stones. Well, not yet,
Aliona giggled and turned to me.
I need to channel your stone magic for a moment, my love.
Sure, I said with a shrug.
I'll use Lord Evan's stone magic to replicate the stones on the ground,
she explained.
Then I'll enchant the blanket to camouflage us against the stone.
Brilliant!
Polina clapped her hands together.
I don't think it will last very long with so many people to cover, but it should at least get us to the cave,
Aliona said.
Your dragon knows where to go, right?
Yeah, he's ready, I confirmed. We walked just far enough for me to touch one of the stones, and Aliona took my other hand and closed her eyes. It felt like water seeped up the hand touching the stones, flowed across my chest, and trickled down from my other hand into Aliona, and I shivered as she grabbed the blanket and began to chant.
Stones of land, golden strong,
she murmured.
Hide us where we don't belong.
Suddenly, the flow of water rushed through me, and I watched in awe as the exact color of the stones bloomed on the blanket in Aliona's hands. In a matter of seconds, the blanket looked exactly like the stones laid out in front of us. Then Aliona stood up and opened the fabric for us all to walk underneath it, and I took the lead and held the blanket over my head without blocking my vision. The camouflage would be useless if we tripped over a rock and rolled out from underneath it. I felt the tug of my inner dragon's pull again, and I motioned for everyone to join me under the blanket. Not only did we not know what was going on in the cave, we didn't know how long the enchantment would last, so we had to get moving. The blanket seemed much smaller once we were all piled underneath it. Aliona's belly was pressed into my backside, and the dryads were right behind her. Nokomis and Leica squeezed in behind them, and Nike brought up the rear while he tried to keep a little space between his body and Leica's furry tail. Okay, let's move, I ordered. The first steps were awkward as we all tried to keep the same pace. But then we got into a groove that was only slowed by the larger boulders that required more maneuvering to get around. All the while, I followed the desperate pull of my inner dragon. Hurry. I furrowed my brow and pulled everyone along a bit faster until we reached the base of a rock formation about 200 yards in. It looked no different from any of the others, but my gaze traveled up the rocky stone face to the mouth of another green stone cave at the top.
Is that it?
Aliona whispered. Yeah, I replied, as I scanned the side of the stone and found a set of jutting rocks that looked like steps. It looks like we can only get up over there.
We need to move quickly,
she said in a low voice.
The enchantment is fading.
Let's go. We scurried around the base of the rocks until we reached the steps. Once we were closer, I realized they looked man-made, so they had to be how the Kosan and his group made their way to the cave. We were definitely in the right place. My gaze was caught by several sets of muddy boot prints that led away from the steps and disappeared beyond the other stone towers. But I shook my head and focused. Mikhail and Angelos had already said the guards took turns keeping watch, so it made sense for there to be a trail to their other hiding place. I'd follow those tracks later. For now, I had some dragons to save. The steps were just close enough to reach, but far enough apart to be difficult with the blanket masking our arrival. We climbed the steps in less synchronicity than we'd walked in, but we were all determined to reach the top. A thin layer of sweat beaded up on my forehead as we trudged up toward the cave, and I slowed our pace when we got close enough to hear voices.
"Wants to wait it out," one man said,
For what? Another one asked in a shrill voice. For the brothers to come back and kill us all.
They're too weak for that, the first one laughed. We broke them over and over again. The others are still too fragile from their punishments to even stand.
I still think we should relocate,
the second one argued.
What if the brothers got more dragons to fight?
What other dragons? The first one snickered. The Kosan took what he wanted, and the sage killed the rest. We have nothing to worry about, Bard.
I'm not the only one who disagrees with that, Bard insisted. Me and Rob were talking and...
And Rob is an idiot, the first man growled. If you listen to him instead of the Kosan, then you are too. He'll kill you both if he hears you talking like that.
And us for listening to you, a third man said. So just shut up and wait like everyone else.
I counted at least three distinctive voices, but I knew there was at least one more guard to prepare for.
We don't even know if the wolves,
Bard started.
I said shut up,
the third man boomed. I heard the distinctive sound of a slap, and I figured Bard had just lost his argument about moving the hiding place for the prisoners. We crept up to the last step, and I motioned for my group to climb up and over to hide behind the lip of the cave. Then I peeked around the corner to count how many guards stood watch. I guessed the man rubbing his cheek was Bard, and he seemed to have left the other two men as he stood a few feet away with his face twisted into a scowl. A fourth man leaned against the opposite wall of the cave's opening, and he tossed a dagger in the air before he caught it and tossed it again. All four men appeared to be human, but they were all armed with various weapons. Bard had a sword trapped to his belt, while one of the other men gripped an axe at his side. The guy with the dagger also had a sword on his back, and the other guard held a long staff with a sharp rounded blade on the top. The two men finished their conversation and began to pace back and forth along the edge of the cave. And I knew we'd have to be silent in our attack, so they couldn't alert the rest of the group. I started to unsheathe the sword of Hatra when its spirit spoke in my head.
Wait!
Mariah urged me. I paused with my hand on the jeweled handle when a fifth guard walked out of the shadows of the cave and approached Bard.
If you know what's good for you, you keep your mouth shut, he grunted. The Kosan doesn't like being questioned, especially by someone who's only been here a few months.
He brandished a stiletto blade in front of Bard's face with a barbaric grin, before he shoved the knife into his belt and joined the others in guarding the cave. I turned and held up five fingers to the rest of my group. We knew there could still be more, but at least we had something to start with. And we knew how many lives we'd be taking today. I held up my fist and began to count on my fingers as my people prepared their own weapons. One. Lyca's broadsword was silent as she pulled it from her back scabbard and gripped it while her gray ears flattened against her head. Two. Nokomis and Nike slid their noble swords from their belts and nodded. Three. I tossed the blanket aside, and we barreled around the corner with our weapons ready for a fight.